Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello, football frolickers. It's the return of the Game Day Premier League preview podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, Alex Crook, and the assistant editor of the Daily Mirror, Darren Lewis. Four tops, Liverpool, City, Manchester United and Chelsea head the Champions League groups after week two of the soon-to-be-altered competition. Coming up, he can't help himself. Marcus Rashford, feeder of the nation, gets ready to take a bite out of Arsenal. Going loco, Barca president resigns and parried to the point as he accuses Minister of preferring ballet to ballers. Our main thrust is eight massive previews as Game Day brings you three big commentaries on Saturday and Sunday, including the champions at home to West Ham, Manchester City going to Sheffield United, and Aston Villa welcoming the Saints. All that plus rivalry roulette on the podcast that delivers more for their wage than Ertzel and Aubameyang combined. This is the Game Day Preview Podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Alex, smiling from ear to ear as United thrashed last year's semi-finalists. And that diamond in midfield got a lot of attention. But Rashford was the one that made it sparkle, wasn't he, Crook?
Well, he is the real diamond, isn't he, Marcus Rashford? And I've got to say, it's fantastic to watch. He struggled a bit at the back end of last season coming back from injury. Then there were suggestions, unfounded claims, that maybe he was distracted by the fantastic work that he's doing off the pitch. But in the last two or three weeks, the real Marcus Rashford has stepped up to the plate. And you could argue, and I probably would argue, that he's in the form of his life right now. And you can tell he's loving every minute. And as you say, that was a real statement performance. Obviously, after the 6-1 thrashing by Spurs, I was fairly critical of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his tactics. But you have to say the way that he and the team have responded to that defeat has been absolutely sensational, barring a pretty drab draw against Chelsea. And hopefully now they can follow up that European performance with a real star turn against Arsenal this weekend.
Chelsea were pretty impressive too. I thought Mendy's now started four games and is yet to concede a goal. He radiates confidence. I mean, he's worth $25 million just for the fact that he's kept four clean sheets. Chelsea rarely have done that. Ziyech starting for the first time, Werner on the score sheet. But Pulisic was the one who really made the impact coming off the bench. He was outstanding after coming into the fray in the second half, Darren.
Yeah, the biggest win for 3 years in front of Roman Abramovich. When you spend that much money, the owner wants to see where that money's gone. And he saw it in that performance because they were so clinically in front of goal. They were dominant throughout. Pulisic I've loved ever since he set foot inside Stamford Bridge. He's got pace, he's got trickery, he's got a goal-scoring touch. And it's weird, actually. If Chelsea didn't have as many resources as they do have, Pulisic would be on the back pages every week. He's just such a good player. Mendy is probably the most important aspect of the whole win, though. When he's in goal, Chelsea feel confident. They are capable of anything. When he's not in goal, they could go out in the group stages. I think he and Silva are the key men for Chelsea, and I think we'll be talking about them quite a lot this season.
Premier League previews to come, but let's just quickly assess the explosive resignation of the Barca president, who in his speech as he decided to leave his post, he said, yeah, and I've signed us up for a European Super League. Mic drop and walked out. What are the implications of this? I mean, Darren, there's been a lot of talk about the possibility of a European Super League, but is this no more than just posturing ahead of negotiations with UEFA about the restructuring of the Champions League?
No, it's going to happen. It's just a question of when. They're talking about high-profile sponsors. I won't name them here on the show, but they are clearly having detailed conversations. And I think when there are this many smoke signals, you have to see what is being said to you. And it's very clear that when you look at the big clubs and the revenues they believe they can rake in, particularly with their American owners having an eye on the finance from the territories where they have huge numbers of subscribers, you realize that the domestic leagues don't hold the same appeal for them anymore. And we already know what the format's going to be, the year it's going to start. This is a drip feed of information about something that is coming sooner rather than later.
Is this just fueled, though, by the jealousy of the big teams in Spain, Italy, Germany, of the Premier League and the product that has been generated by 20 English clubs over the course of the last 30 years?
No, I think it's driven by money. You look at a club like Manchester United, 4.2 billion people, they know that they will be able to monetize in territories like the Far East. And I've been on pre-season with Liverpool, for example. I've seen the appetite, even for the most modest of games. I saw the Asia Trophy. They played West Brom a couple of years ago. They were queuing around the block to see them. This is about money, because that's what the American owners, that's their bottom line. And for me, I don't think it's about any kind of emotion or you know, jealousy or otherwise. I think that from their point of view, they see pound signs and they want them.
I think my point is that for the English clubs, they can continue to make money with the Premier League. Maybe they see that whole bubble is about to burst, and before it does, they want to go on for something new. But I think in part it's more fueled by the European clubs, who know that they maximised all their income in their own territories and need to expand further. And if they're going to get more eyeballs than the Premier
League... Just before Crook comes in, Barcelona are a club heavily in debt. I mean, I'm sure you pick up on this.
Not as much as Real Madrid. Apparently, they've got £900 million worth of euros to pay back.
Exactly. So you can see why the appeal of something where they would be able to rake that cash in is so strong. And that's, you know, even for the English clubs, you know, they've been there and seen it and done it now as far as English football is concerned. They want the finances that come with this. And they know that for all of the anger around Europe, people will watch. Sorry, Crook.
I think you both make some really pertinent points. I don't necessarily share the rage of the average Premier League fan who thinks that this is necessarily going to dilute our product, because my understanding is that if there is a European Super League, it's going to replace the Champions League and therefore shouldn't necessarily affect matters domestic. And listen, the Champions League is a great competition from the knockout stages onwards, but you've got to say some of those group stage games are pretty turgid. There's some teams in there who are just making up the numbers. I'm just going through the list here. Ferencvaros, Krasnodar, who Chelsea swatted aside last night, Michelin. They're no contest matches, and that wasn't the idea when the concept of a European Cup was devised. So it's no longer necessarily the cream of Europe.
I disagree with you there. I think you get some cracking games in the group stages, and there was a particular group stage a couple of years ago when Tottenham were involved in it with, I think it was Napoli, Tottenham and Borussia Dortmund all ended up on 10 points, and one went through on goal difference. And regularly, actually, if you look back at the group stages over the last few years, even Liverpool, when they won the Champions League, had to rely on a big save from Alisson in their last group game to get them beyond their group stage, to get into the knockout stages. And if you think that they'd also been tested last year by someone like Red Bull Salzburg, yeah, the idea of closing the shop so that little dreams like Red Bull Salzburg, Midtjylland, who only formed in 1999, could come into European football and actually show their worth. The idea of a Porto coming through and winning the European Cup like they did, even a Leipzig getting through to the semi-finals last year. I mean, all these things have happened recently. So the idea that they're just a waste of time, these group stages, I think is nonsense, actually.
I'm not saying all of the groups are a waste of time, but the clubs you mentioned there were all, you know, apart from Salzburg, that dream team who were bankrolled by a huge energy drink manufacturer. I'm not sure too many people would necessarily agree with your assessment that they're a dream club, but Napoli and Liverpool and Dortmund and Tottenham, when they end up in the same group, yeah, it's entertaining, but there are too many whipping boys in the group stage of the Champions League, in my opinion. I think... You're right, the prospect of teams not being able to play their way into this Super League is probably the big downfall. But as I say, I'm open to change. You know, I think the Champions League has worked now for a number of years, but football has to develop, and maybe this is just a way that's going to move forward.
Paul Pogba just racing through, now plays the ball through, looking for Greenwood, could be a chance. Greenwood with the side foot, and there it is! Goal! Mason Greenwood putting Manchester United ahead at Old Trafford.
Arsenal right-hand side, Elneny sliding in inside the penalty area. What a moment this is for Aubameyang to walk it into the net for 2-1. And it's the two Arsenal substitutes that combine. Bellerin making the run. The ball slipped down the inside right channel and he's tapped it across the edge of the six-yard box. Aubameyang couldn't miss. And Arsenal have turned it around with two goals in 4 minutes.
Bruno Fernandes striding clear. Oh, outstanding finish from Marcus Rashford. And Manchester United cutting loose here at St James's Park.
Free kick to Arsenal. Six inside the penalty area. Left-footed ball bent in and David Luiz heads it home for 1-1.
Martin Keown wistfully uttered the words, "Oh, I wish we could go back to the old days," when discussing this game on TalkSport this week. Screaming in one another's faces, lobbing pizza in the tunnel, both vying for the championship. It's a bit different now. You try to get 10 meat feasts delivered in one go in this climate. It's impossible. United have made their worst start to a season at home in 48 years. How do they win a home league game for the first time since July, Crook?
Well, I think they need to be a lot more ambitious than they were against Chelsea, because we've spoken a lot over the past couple of weeks about Arsenal and some bumps in the road now under the Mikel Arteta project. They aren't the force they were at the back end of last season when they won the FA Cup. Aubameyang certainly isn't the force that he was when he was banging goals for fun. So I think if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer plays the right tactics, plays the right system and adopts the right approach, I think this is a game that Manchester United can win. You know, confidence has to be high after five past Leipzig in the Champions League in midweek. They went to Paris and won as well. Didn't follow that up with a particularly good performance. I think he'll shuffle the pack again. And I've got to say, I think he's used the squad quite well over the past fortnight. So I don't think this Arsenal side should hold any fears at all, really.
Old problems are returning for Mikel Arteta, Darren, aren't they? They've managed just one away win in five and still searching for that victory on the road against the Big Six team. A drought that stretches back to January 2015.
If I'm not mistaken, no goal in five in the league for Aubameyang. Would I be correct in saying that? I know you guys are very hot on the stats.
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is a gunner in a jam, isn't he? He's forgotten how to pull the trigger. His expected goal tally is now 0.53. Hipsters will understand this. Crooks, stay with me. That's not per game, by the way. That's over the last 540 minutes of Premier League football. So in 540 minutes of Premier League football, he's been expected to score half a goal. That's less than one goal in that time. He had one touch in the box against Leicester, one touch in the box against Manchester City. He's had five attempts on goal this season, of which just two have come inside the box. He's scored in three of the last four games against Manchester United. There's not much chance of him repeating it with those statistics, Darren.
No, there aren't. I mean, I'm going to buck a trend here and back him to end a run, a very curious run with Arsenal, full stop, with players who are coming to the end of their contracts or in the last year. Because what we've seen over the last 10, 12 years is that when players are in that final year, either they sign a new deal and they're not as good as they were before with the money weighing them down, look at Mesut Ozil, or they leave. Nasri, Fabregas, Van Persie, Sanchez, Ramsey, etc. But I just think Aubameyang's too good a player for this run to continue. We know he scores goals. We know he wears his heart on his sleeve. We know that he's inspired by the legends like Ian Wright. And I think that he is one player who could actually buck that particular trend. I have to say this, and I'm going to maybe upset a few people when I do say it, but I think we're such hypocrites. Leipzig at the moment are not quite the same team they were that got to the semi-finals last season. Solskjaer inspires Rashford, who you could argue inspires himself, to score a hat trick and the team to win 5-0. And suddenly overnight, everyone is saying that Solskjaer is incredible and he's a fantastic manager. The same guy everyone was saying would not have the job if he was the manager if he'd been a manager of Molde but had played for any other club, is suddenly banging on about Solskjaer being the guy. I'm sorry, I can't have it. I'm still not trusting Manchester United. You cannot trust them with Solskjaer in charge.
Sorry, when you say there are some hypocrites, do you mean that guy, Alex Crook?
I don't think I said that Solskjaer is suddenly a fantastic manager overnight. I would still swap him for Maurizio Pochettino or even Ralf Hasenhüttl. Yes, I said it again tomorrow, but you have to give credit where credit is due. And I've been reading some quotes from Harry Maguire. Obviously, that Tottenham defeat was chastening. The players, my understanding is, held an inquest amongst themselves and tried to work out exactly what had gone wrong in that game. And the form since conceding 6 at home, only the second time in the Premier League era, has been exceptional. You can't argue with that.
Three games.
To be fair, I wasn't really necessarily coming at you. I did hear, I was listening to Sports Bar on Talk Sport, and loads of people were calling up saying similar things about Solskjaer, and Andy and Jason were really gushing in their praise for him. But I just can't see that you could go so far the other way, given the form that we've seen, given the many eras in which Solskjaer's been deficient, discipline being one of them in this start to the season. I'm still not having Solskjaer as, listen, he may well improve and that's fine. And he has to be given the leeway to be able to do that. But I just don't think you can go so far the other way. And I think that this game for Arsenal is still there for the taking.
I've always been pretty middling, I think, on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I didn't get very...
Same as me.
I didn't get hysterical when he was losing games and not doing it. I think he should have been appreciated a lot more for guiding them to third in the Premier League and getting them to 3 semi-finals, especially in the circumstances. I thought he did very well at the end of last season by bringing in Bruno Fernandes. The recruitment's been okay up until this point after an era in which recruitment was terrible after Ferguson. Again, similarly, I'm not getting too excited because they've kept a couple of clean sheets and they've beaten Leipzig in the Champions League. But I just think he's a steady Eddie. Just keep things ticking over for now. Because and it may well be that he ends up developing into a better coach, or maybe he doesn't. But ultimately, the idea of replacing him when things were going bad, or saying that he's the Messiah, both seem ridiculous to me.
You've hit the nail on the head, both of you, actually, because you've effectively said that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is learning on the job, and I think that's true. And I also feel that every time you think he's on his knees, he manages to turn the tide, and credit to him for that. But actually, all that does is paper over the cracks in the short term and means that ultimately United are falling behind everybody else.
As soon as that defence comes up against quality, it's going to be banging in trouble. Now, some people will say, oh, they came up against PSG the other week and Twain Zabi did well. And he did fantastic. But I just look at Manchester United still and I see a side you cannot trust, and they can pull off a couple of great results and then they can go to and they can host Arsenal and stink the place out. I would hedge my bets before going too far for the weekend.
Okay, all right. Okay, so it's Arsenal against Manchester United at Old Trafford. That's on Sunday at 5:30 on Saturday. Are Liverpool going to dish out the Hammer House of Horrors?
Mane crosses and Jota heads it in, and Liverpool are into the lead this time.
We don't struggle with confidence or whatever. It's just we have to make sure that we are ready for this game.
It's an outstanding goal by Mikel Antonio, and West Ham with their first effort take the lead.
The confidence in the group, you know, the character, the team spirit we've got at the moment is getting his results.
In by Henderson, right footed. Mane's header, great save. Firmino taps in the rebound and Liverpool are level. And finally, Roberto Firmino is on the score sheet.
Liverpool a little bit lucky in their game with Midtjylland in the week, despite dominating. The Danes had a huge chance to make it 1-1 before that. A late penalty, but they'll be slightly hampered by the fact that Fabinho is out. So the injury curse has struck again. So he came into the heart of the defence. I actually think that him moving into defence was a good thing because he was very comfortable doing it, although it did leave gaps in midfield. But now with him injured, Darren, what are you going to do next?
Well, the word on the street is that perhaps the injury isn't as bad as first feared and that he could even play against West Ham. I'd be surprised, like you, because it didn't look good when he limped off and the signs were not good. But listen, if he plays, they've got a chance. Even if he plays, West Ham have got a chance because Michelin still were able to create chances. I was a little bit scathing about Man United. I don't think I could be much less scathing about the Liverpool defence in midfield and in the final third. We all know about their quality. Jota was fantastic the other day. As we know, Minamino played really well and they had a good night at the office. At the back, they are still there for the taking. And I think the only thing that works in their favour is that we don't know if Mikel Antonio will play. I saw him terrorise Man City last weekend. When he went off, you can actually hear the sigh of relief come up from the Man City players because of his ability to hold up the ball, draw other people into the play and score goals. I think as far as Liverpool are concerned, if he doesn't play, they'll win. If he does play, they're in trouble.
I think he will play. By all accounts, he is going to be fit, Mikel Antonio, and that's a massive boost. I mean, they're never going to have a better chance, are they, West Ham, of beating Liverpool when you look at those injury problems. I'd be surprised if Fabinho plays. I guess the only upside for Liverpool and for this podcast that the injury isn't that serious is that we don't need to do a minute silence like we did for Virgil van Dijk. No need for Darren Lewis to go into mourning.
No, it wasn't mourning. It was a grieving process.
Okay, so no need for a grieving process this time around. But I think West Ham have got to approach this game believing they can win. And, you know, last season, I think too many teams went up against Liverpool and lost the game in the tunnel. I don't think it's going to happen this weekend. I think that fear factor, because of the injury situation, because of the loss of Van Dijk, because Liverpool's form has been stuttery at the start of the season, I think that fear factor has gone somewhat.
Yeah. They've only won 28 of their last 29 at Anfield and are unbeaten in 62 home games in the Premier League. Yeah, fear factor has disappeared.
Well, listen, although West Ham, Crook's right, they do need to believe they can win. To be fair, before this run of fixtures, lots of people had written them off on paper and they defied a lot of the odds and made a lot of people eat their words. But this is Liverpool you're talking about. And it may well turn into a shootout. But Liverpool will win if it turns into a shootout because of the players they've got in the final two-thirds of the pitch.
Do you think they'll have to use Reece Williams? I saw him against Lincoln City. I also saw him in the Carabao Cup game. First 20 minutes or so, he had a few wobbles, but after that, he seemed to settle in. I mean, he had the benefit of having Van Dijk alongside him in the game at Lincoln.
Yeah, he looked neat and tidy. He looked confident, more to the point. And the fact that Liverpool have been able to play the younger players in the cup competitions and have been able to mix and match with some of the senior players means that in situations like this, those players won't be overawed. So there's every chance that he could play. And if he did, you would know that Klopp's got confidence in him. I don't have fears as such about Liverpool. I'm just very curious to see what pans out in relation to Fabinho. You know, as you were saying, Alex, that even before Fabinho's injury, and even before Van Dijk's injury, Liverpool had conceded 13 goals in 5 matches. I think they needed something like 14 or 15 games before they conceded as many goals last season. So there are still issues in that back line to deal with, regardless of who plays. And if Antonio plays, he'll test them. But I still expect Liverpool to win.
Right. Earlier on Saturday at 12:30, Sheffield United against Manchester City. Can the Blades find their cutting edge?
Burge right-footed, scores! Alisson goes the wrong way. Burge scores for Sheffield United.
We all have to dig in, work a little bit harder, stick together, stick to our beliefs, what has got us to this situation.
He finds Foden, who turns and scores, and it's a brilliant equaliser from Manchester City.
Well, we're struggling, we can say, so no preparation and a lot of games that we know is tough.
Last season, these games between Manchester City and Sheffield United were very, very tight, weren't they? However, this season, Sheffield United have not been the same team. They're still awaiting their first win of the campaign. And I know, Crook, you've been talking to Chris Wilder in the last 24 hours. What has he had to say about the prospect of taking on Manchester City?
Do you know what? He impressed me, Chris Wilder, because obviously it's been a sticky start to the season. It's been a sticky run for Sheffield United post-lockdown, but he isn't conducting himself like a man who is concerned by that. He still has confidence in the principles that served him so well last season, and indeed the players that performed with great credit in their first season back in the Premier League. He pointed to those games against Manchester City, as you've alluded to there, and the fact they were able to compete against a Pep Guardiola side who probably came into those games in better form than they are now. So I think there's a confidence about Chris Wilder. You mentioned in the intro there, they need to start scoring goals. I've actually put together a feature on Rian Brewster for game day this weekend. I've been speaking to his dad, his former coach, teammates, and Chris Wilder himself. And it's clear also how highly Jurgen Klopp rates him. So I almost want him to do well, because there's been so many Liverpool youngsters. You talk about Jordan Ibe and Dominic Solanke and even Harry Wilson, who've been touted for great things. It hasn't quite happened. And I'm just hoping that for Sheffield United's sake and for Brewster himself, who seems like a really grounded individual, it will happen for him at Bramall Lane. And if it does, then Sheffield United would have a chance of getting themselves out of danger.
One of the biggest issues they've had is that they seem to keep conceding goals in the second half of matches. And even though there are injury worries for Pep Guardiola and his team, Darren, the fact is that they probably are able to bring on replacements towards the end of the game when teams are tiring to really test that Sheffield United defence. And if, as we've seen so far this campaign, Sheffield United can't score goals, then that's going to be their undoing again.
The interesting thing about City is that I think they're in a bit of trouble. Afterwards, Pep Guardiola was talking to us and saying that the players haven't had enough time for pre-season. Some have had to self-isolate. Some are still recovering from injury. Aguero won't play. He only managed 45 minutes last weekend. Jesus is still on the sidelines. Fernandinho is out. They started with six senior players last weekend. Kevin De Bruyne could only manage 22 minutes at the end of the game last weekend. Listen, Sheffield United won't have a better chance in relation to playing Manchester City. That's not to say that by any stretch of the imagination that they're going to win, but I think the poor run that they're on at the moment, they might do something to maybe bring it to an end, because this isn't the City side that we know and love. And although they've had good results in the Champions League, they've found it a little bit more difficult. I've got to tell you, if West Ham's decision making in the final third had been better last weekend, I think they'd have won. And so I wouldn't say with any certainty that they're going to go to Sheffield United, Manchester City, and win.
Like we've said, though, scoring goals, such a problem for Sheffield United.
But who scores them? Who's going to score? Who's going to score for Man City? I mean, I think...
Sorry, who scores Brewster for Manchester City?
Manchester City
have got weapons all over the field. I mean, I saw Ilkay Gundogan strike a free kick from the edge of the penalty area the other week. He scored a brilliant penalty as well. He scores goals. Ferran Torres hasn't done too badly since coming in from Valencia in the summer. He scored a lot of goals out in Spain, and I'm sure that eventually he'll fit in at Manchester City. Kevin De Bruyne, as you mentioned, only played a few minutes in midweek, but I'm sure he'll be back and ready for the Premier League. He scores a few goals. So I think this is one of those weekends where you look at the team sheets, you look at the news that's coming in, and everyone goes, oh, West Ham have got a great chance against Liverpool. Sheffield United have got a great chance against Manchester City. But at the end of the day, Manchester City and Liverpool will both win.
Yeah, but see, Sam, we sometimes guilty of, and as we should, we respect these teams. And why do we respect them? Because of the consistency that they've shown us over a long period of time. So I'm not sitting here saying Sheffield United are going to beat Manchester City. Absolutely not. I'd be crazy to say that. And I'd be crazy not to respect the goal-scoring potential that City do have. What I'm saying is I watched those players play last weekend and they weren't inspiring. And I saw a lot of reaction from City fans saying as a very similar thing. The Premier League is different to the Champions League. It's high octane. It's helter-skelter. You commentate on it every week.
Yeah, it's a lot more intense.
The Champions League, absolutely, it's much less cat and mouse than it is in the Champions League. And all I'm saying is that for some reason, City weren't the same side that we know and love last weekend. And I'll be fascinated more than anything else to see how they get on against Sheffield United.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back to the show that rarely stops.
Surge right footed, scores! Alisson goes the wrong way. Burge scores for Sheffield United.
He finds Foden, who turns and scores. And it's a brilliant equaliser from Manchester City.
Mane crosses and Jota heads it in! And Liverpool are into the lead this time.
It's an outstanding goal by Mikhail Antonio. And West Ham, with their first effort, take the lead.
Here's Grealish in the penalty area. Grealish puts it on his right foot and puts it in the back of the net. Jack Grealish has doubled Aston Villa's lead.
It was an instant finish by Ings, and this goal does stand, and Southampton lead.
The Premier League is back well and truly, and no better place to hear it than on game day on Talk Sport.
Right, it's time for Roulette Rivalry. Lucy, our esteemed producer, is here to navigate our way through these three fixtures that we haven't touched on yet in Roulette Rivalry. Lucy will hand out a game each and we'll preview it off the top of our heads. Lucy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, sir.
Lucy, I understand that you're moving house at the moment.
Yeah, and I know where you're going with this because I told you something, didn't I, before the others arrived.
Where are you right now? Are you still under the bed or have you managed to get yourself out of that?
Basically, what happened was I was packing well late into the night last night and I cleared out all under my bed and there was a stray coat hanger and I went to go and retrieve it and it was just out of my reach. So I forced myself in and for a good, I'd say 30 seconds, my life flashed before my eyes.
Did you think you were trapped? How did you extricate yourself from under the bed?
So I've watched a lot of Bear Grylls documentaries and also a few documentaries on cave diving.
Oh, good.
I exhaled all the oxygen out of my lungs, so I was small enough to scoot straight back out of the bed.
Oh, my word.
Love that.
Have you got a similar story?
No, I'm too big to get stuck anyway. No, do you know what? Actually, I have a phobia of birds, right? Genuine, I hate birds. All yeah, little beaks,
really?
little feet. And I think it comes down to the fact that when I was a kid, this is true, there's a place called Birdwell just up the A3, not far from where I live. And I got stuck in a turnstile. So, and, you know, for a good couple of minutes, I couldn't get out of this turnstile. And I think that's where my phobia of birds comes from.
Were you in a bit of a flap? Okay. Shall we move on to the roulette rivalry? The three games this week, Wolves Palace, Newcastle Everton and Burnley versus Chelsea, all of which will, I'm sure, get you all inhaling a lot of oxygen. So, could you dish out the games, please?
Right, are there any preferences who wants to go first?
I don't mind going last.
Right, Darren, I'm going to give you Burnley v Chelsea.
Yes, let's get it.
And your time starts now.
Well, the most fascinating aspect of this is that Burnley are about to be taken over, it would appear. And if that's the case, then there will be more resources available to Sean Dyche, who's done a super job there so far. And he'll be able to get in even more quality to frustrate the likes of Chelsea. I wonder if the players will be inspired by that talk as well to put up a barrier to shut out the likes of Timo Werner and Kai Havertz, who had a really good start to their careers at Stamford Bridge. In goal, I've said already, with Mendy and Silva, Chelsea are near impenetrable at the back, but at the same time, Burnley could frustrate them up front and maybe even get away with a point at Turf Moor. I think they'd be good for it too. I wouldn't necessarily suggest that Chelsea are bankers in this one.
That's another big prediction. So you've gone with Sheffield United to beat Manchester City, West Ham to beat Liverpool, and now Burnley to get saying against Chelsea.
I didn't say, whoa. I didn't say Sheffield United would beat Manchester City.
What a treble.
That treble comes in, Darren won't be here this time next week.
I did not say Sheffield United would beat Manchester City. I said they get something out of the game, and I said West Ham could get something out of the game if Fabinho plays. And I'll just say two more things.
Okay.
Aston Villa 7, Liverpool 2. Manchester United 1, Spurs 6. Okay. It's that kind of crazy season.
Okay. All right. Okay, you've had your time. Let somebody else speak now. Go on. Dish it out. What's next?
Right. You can go second.
I thought you said he wanted to go last.
Yeah, because he said he wanted to go last. He doesn't control this section. I do.
She loves a little bit of power, doesn't she?
She does, yeah.
Get back under the bed.
I'm going to give you Wolves v Crystal Palace. And your time starts now.
AKA the game that nobody really wants to watch. I've been a bit underwhelmed by Wolves' recent performances. I think they need to find a plan B that doesn't involve Raul Jimenez scoring the majority of their goals. Obviously, they're going through a transitional phase, having let Jota and Doherty go. But I do think they're lacking a little bit of an attacking spark. So Nuno Espirito Santo will have been working hard on that in the training ground. And speaking of teams who lack an attacking spark, there's nobody that comment applies to more than Crystal Palace. So again, I think this will be a relatively low-scoring game. I would expect Palace to try and keep it tight defensively, have very little possession and try and hit Wolves on the counter-attack. But given Wolves' lack of goals at the moment, it wouldn't surprise me if they got something.
There's a lot of binary action with Wolves and Crystal Palace, isn't there? Loads of ones and zeros everywhere.
Yes.
What have I got, Luce?
Well, I think you know what you've got. You've got Newcastle v Everton.
Oh, the big one.
And time starts now.
Newcastle are unbelievably in the sort of relative area of safety, despite the fact that they've played not very well and haven't had too many good opportunities on goal. They beat Burnley, well done to them. But apart from that, they were thrashed by Manchester United. They were lucky to get a point against Tottenham Hotspur. They were lucky to get a point against Wolverhampton Wanderers as well, courtesy of a mishap by the goalkeeper in the last few minutes last weekend. So they've probably got more points than they would expect to have at this stage of the season. Everton suffered a bump in the road against Southampton last week, and I think they'll come out all guns blazing trying to rectify that, because they weren't great at all. They lacked energy. Saints got the better of them. I don't think Newcastle is tactically disciplined. I was going to say something nice about Ralph Harrison, who was their crook, but she stopped me halfway through, so I'm sorry about that. Okay, we've done Wolves, Crystal Palace, Newcastle, Everton, Burnley and Chelsea, which means there's only Aston Villa, Southampton, Spurs, Brighton to come.
Here's Grealish in the penalty area. Grealish puts it on his right foot and puts it in the back of the net. Jack Grealish has doubled Aston Villa's lead.
If you're off it for any stage in this league with the quality of the teams that are in there, you can get a bloody nose very quickly.
It was an instant finish by Ings, and this goal does stand, and Southampton lead.
The biggest mistakes you make when you're successful, you know, and so keep on focused and keep on working hard.
Yes, Sunday is going to be a big day. Aston Villa against Southampton, Spurs against Brighton. Should we start with Aston Villa against Southampton? Because I was about to say something nice about Ralph Hasenhüttl and just how well tactically they've done against Everton. And Aston Villa themselves, you know, last week lost against Leeds United, Crook, but actually they had chances in that game as well before Patrick Bamford ran right towards the end of the match.
Yeah, it wasn't a disastrous performance by any stretch of the imagination, but I'd apply similar comments to Aston Villa to what you've said about Everton. The mark of a semi-decent team is how you respond to adversity, how you bounce back from defeat, and it was a heavy defeat in the end. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see what kind of reaction Dean Smith gets from his players, and that will tell us just how far they've come after their struggles last season, or whether their bright start to the campaign was a false dawn. Southampton couldn't be in better form. It was a tactical masterclass from King Routh against Everton last weekend. I'm enjoying Danny Ings dropping deeper into midfield. Harry Kane style. There's a partnership developing between him and Shea Adams as well. So I think this is going to be a really good game. Away wins have been prevalent in the Premier League this season. Maybe we might just see another.
Have you ever been to a tactical masterclass, just out of interest?
Are you saying it wasn't a tactical masterclass to negate the threat of James Rodriguez and Dominic Calvert-Lewin?
I thought they did well. I mean, tactical masterclass is probably a little bit of an overstatement, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, they done well. But whenever anybody out-coaches somebody else, it's always like a tactical masterclass.
He's a bit grumpy today, isn't he, Crook?
He does, for some reason, and I think it's because he gets on okay with Mark Hughes, he's a bit reluctant to give Ralph Hasenhüttl too much credit.
Oh,
that's not true. I like Ralph Rabbit Hutch. I mean, I'm not like you. I don't fawn all over him. I'm just trying to bring balance to the force, because literally you think he's the best thing since sliced bread, even though when he first got appointed, you had to Google him because you had never heard of him. I'm just trying to sort of balance things out. I thought they were good against Everton. But remember, you said they got a good draw against Chelsea prior to that. But yeah, they were handed that, weren't they? They did do well against West Brom and Burnley prior to that with two good victories. But this is a different level of opponent now. Aston Villa, they've had a successful start to the season. I think it'll be interesting to see. One of the things I worry a little bit about Southampton still is that defence, Darren. They have conceded 8 goals in their last 8 away games.
Yeah, and I was at Chelsea when Chelsea went 3-0 up and would have won, but for the problems they've got in their own defence. But as far as the Southampton defence is concerned, if you've got a bit of pace, you can outmaneuver them. And I think Aston Villa might well give them a problem in that regard. They're well enough organised. And Danny Ings and the supporting cast will give opposing teams a bit of trouble. But the likes of Yannick Vestergaard in defence, just a little bit too slow for me. So this will be a really fascinating match.
I think Vestergaard's played well, in fairness. He was brought into the team against Burnley mainly because he's as big as a skyscraper, but he's kept his place. He kept Dominic Calvert-Lewin quiet. I think he is someone that they have spent a lot of time in training, trying to improve as a defender, because he hasn't been a great signing by any stretch of the imagination. But Leicester showed a bit of interest in him in January. So clearly Brendan Rodgers believes there's a player there. And I think he's got that spot now alongside Jan Bednarek. He's elbowed Jack Stevens out of the starting 11. He was pretty much mainstay under Ralph Hasenhüttl after that 9-0 defeat against Leicester. So again, you have to give big credit where it's due.
Well, just for a very brief, Timo Werner rolled Vestergaard for his first goal, basically outpaced him and was able to check back and basically put the ball in the other bottom corner. And for Chelsea's second goal, there was a ball over the top and Werner lifted it over Bednarek, over the keeper, and headed it in. And neither player were alert enough or quick enough to be able to spot the danger and stop it. Maybe they did spot it. Maybe they were just too slow to stop it. I'm not saying either are bad players. Harry Maguire is an £85 million defender, but if you've got a bit of pace, you can get away from him. And that's the problem I think both those players have. They're good players, but a bit of pace undoes them.
I can't work out whether this actually happened or I had a weird dream. But in the back of the recesses, the dark corners of my mind, I've had this thought about Yannick Vestergaard. Did he play up front at the end of a game recently? And I can't work out what's more worrying, whether it actually happened or that I dreamt it. Both of which are disturbing. Anyway, Spurs against Brighton. Big game for Brighton because they keep playing reasonably well, not winning. Actually, on Monday night, they played away against West Bromwich Albion. They created the bulk of the opportunities. Played at home against West Bromwich Albion, the bulk of the opportunities in the first half, tied in the second half, but didn't take any of those opportunities that were presented to them until they got a helping hand from a rather calamitous set of circumstances involving Jake Livermore and Branislav Ivanovic. I think we had a conversation on the podcast last week about them not taking those chances. How do they solve it?
Well, it's a tricky one because it's been the hallmark since Graham Potter came in. They played well most weeks, but they're not picking up the points performances suggest. So there's two schools of thought, really. One is that as long as you keep playing well, eventually you'll get your rewards. And they did actually post-lockdown, picked up some important points to keep their head above the relegation line. But the other school of thought is that if you keep playing well and not winning, that's a dangerous habit to get into. I think they need to find a way to keep Adam Lallana on the pitch for a bit longer. The games against West Bromwich Albion certainly turned when he went off. I think Lamptey down the right-hand side has been one of the finds of the season. But like Wolverhampton Wanderers, they're too reliant on Neil Mopay to score the bulk of their goals. They don't get enough goals from midfield. And I fear for them this weekend. I can't really make any great case. I know they beat Spurs at the Amex Stadium last season when Spurs were a really low ebb under Maurizio Pochettino, but I can't see past the Tottenham victory in this one.
Yeah, listen, I would 100% agree. Tottenham are in a fantastic moment right now. Hard fought win the other night at Burnley, but that's a measure of the progress that they've made, because last season Spurs probably would have drawn or even lost that game. I think that the fact that Kane and Son are now one of the most prolific partnerships in Premier League history says a lot for the direction that they're heading in, because Gareth Bale is trying to get his fitness back, but everyone isn't spending their time waiting for Bale. He'll go into a side that are currently flying at the moment, and defensively, that's key. They are improving as well, obviously, after that West Ham nightmare where West Ham came back from three goals down. I can't see Spurs losing this.
Spurs have been pretty prolific in the games between the two. I think Brighton have won just one of the last eight meetings between these two sides. You've got Harry Kane at the focal point of that attack. You've got Gareth Bale still to come in and do a job for them as well. We've hardly seen anything of him yet. I mean, that is a talking point, actually, isn't it? The fact that we haven't really seen that much of Gareth Bale in the Premier League since he returned to England. Is that a fitness thing? Is that because the others are playing so well? Is there a slight concern that actually maybe Zidane had a point and that he wasn't up to scratch in terms of team ethic and Jose Mourinho has found that out? Or are we overreacting and just, you know, we should wait and be patient and we'll see the best of him?
I think it's probably a combination of all three of those. First and foremost, clearly someone who hasn't played a lot of football over the past couple of years. You've mentioned already the difference that the Premier League brings compared to the other European leagues. So he needs a bit of time to bed in, but actually don't need him at the moment. As Darren's already said, what the arrival of Gareth Bale has done is provided a lightning rod for the likes of Son to take his game to a new level. That partnership between Harry Kane smacks of a couple of players who don't want to be separated. They don't want to be disrupted. They're quite happy playing together, and Gareth Bale is going to have to wait his turn. I think it's too early to make a judgment on whether Zidane was right. After all, there's a lot of football to be played between now and May, and I think Jose Mourinho is just bedding Bale in slowly.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think as far as Bale is concerned, you can't judge him this early on whether he's good enough or not. But what does help Spurs is that they're winning without him. And he is inspiring the players in that front six, even Vinicius as well. When Vinicius played in the Europa League the other day, he looked good, trust me. And I think Harry Kane will be thinking to himself, if I'm not playing, this guy could come in and nail down. We know it's Harry Kane. He's your Golden Boot winner, World Cup Golden Boot winner. You'd be crazy to drop him. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with somebody like Vinicius coming in saying, I'm not too bad myself. So Spurs have got some fantastic options. I think the fact that Gareth Bale hasn't really played that much is not a bad thing at all, because he's taking his time, finding his feet, and when he is fit and ready to go, he will be some option in the second half of the season.
Okay, before we go, let's have a quick word on the EFL, because Crook, I know that you've been across sort of what's been happening with their finances, etc., etc. Rick Parry's statement this week, having a go at Oliver Dowden, the Minister for Sports, suggesting that he was more interested in saving the Royal Ballet than he was with saving clubs in the EFL. How critical is this, and how much help are they expecting to eventually get from the government? Is this just posturing from Rick Parry, or is there a serious crisis that needs immediate action?
No, there is a serious crisis that needs immediate action. I'm surprised as we sit here on the 29th of October that already we're not seeing clubs go into administration and suffer serious financial problems. I was speaking to an EFL chief executive only yesterday, and he was telling me there are up to a dozen clubs who could well be forced to go down that route by the end of November. That's 4 weeks away, and there's no imminent sign of any kind of rescue package from the government. And I think Rick Parry is dead right. There's been a snobbery from the people in power when it comes to football in general, and particularly the EFL. They're keen to get people back, as you say, into the Royal Ballet and the Royal Albert Hall and other such venues, but clubs outside the Premier League and the obviously a separate entity, but certainly the clubs in the EFL have been left to fend for themselves. I think it's an absolute disgrace. They've not been given a greater level of support. I don't think the government have taken into account at all what football clubs mean to their communities, what football clubs mean for the mental well-being of a large swathe of the population. And you look at the people who historically have based their week around going to watch their team on a Saturday afternoon, the fact they can't do that anymore, they've just been left to fend for themselves. It's absolutely appalling. And I think it's inevitable that we are going to lose clubs. And that is not a situation that we should be facing.
So many good points you make, Crook. But I think Rick Parry's the wrong man to make them. Football does have the money. We just know that the condition for getting that money is giving absolute power to a small number of clubs in the top division. And quite clearly, that's going to be bad for the future of the game. The football clubs in the Championship and Leagues 1 and 2 shouldn't be held hostage in that way. But they are being. Rick Parry was involved in creating that situation. It's kind of misdirection that he would suddenly paint himself as the White Knight when he was involved in a decision-making process and a series of conversations that would have been particularly damaging for the long-term health of the English game. And I think we need to remember that. Rick Parry is making good points about where we are. But let's not... the government have a lot of faults, as we all know. But one of them is not helping football when football is in a position to help itself. We've just come from a transfer window where over £1 billion has been spent by football clubs in a kind of sporting arms race. So nobody is telling me that the money isn't in the game to help the clubs who are in the kind of position that you've just outlined. And yes, the government should be providing help, but football should be helping itself.
We will be back when you wake up on Monday morning with a review of all the games in the post-match pod. We'll look ahead to the two games on Monday night's Fulham taking West Brom. And poor West Brom. They're always in that little slot on 5:30 on a Monday afternoon, aren't they? And Leeds face Leicester City. Thanks to Darren Lewis.
Thank you.
It's all right. Nice white roll neck, by the way, today.
This is called my Nagelsmann.
Is it? No, it's not that bad. Crikey. I mean, that's the worst outfit I've seen on a human being since I went out for Crook for a night out back in March. And thanks to Alex Crook as well.
Enjoyed it, as always.
Please subscribe and rate on your pod provider. We'll be back when you wake up on Monday morning.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.